welcome along from the horse's mouth is back. We're looking ahead to a weekend of racing. The best of both worlds, I think it's fair to say. Third weekend in a row with a Grand National. This time it's up to Scotland and Ayr. And also the Guineas trials continue at Newbury. Today, I've got Rory De Largy as per usual. And Frank Hickey comes in for a Ruby Walsh, who's just been very busy. So Frank Hickey comes in. So Frank, first to you. How are you?
Oh, very good. Yeah. I had a week off. Well, the majority of the week off last week. So we went down to Centre Parks there for a bit, and it was good fun, yeah. Enjoyed it.
My word. Was that Grand National week you had off?
No, I came back in for Friday and Saturday. I was off kind of like the Sunday before through to third. Like, we only came back from Centre Parks Friday morning, and I had the Sunday off as well. So
just five star review, Centre Parks?
Oh, very good, yeah. Yeah, yeah. If they want me to promote it online,
I was just going to say, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
No, to be fair, for bringing kids, absolutely outstanding. No, it genuinely is brilliant.
Hope the CEO of Centre Parks is listening. You're not wearing a Centre Parks hoodie, but yeah, sure. Look, best of luck with that, Frank. Rory,
large,
how are you?
Is the size as well, if they want to send one on.
Rory, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Not too bad.
How was the Grand National Festival all told?
It was busy. But you know, in South London, which of course is the second busiest part of the world when it comes to the Grand National. But yeah, good fun was had. I spent a couple of days as an honorary member of the Racing Post team. So that was, as in I had the use of their offices and had a couple of beers with the lads after work a couple of times. Not with Graham Rodway, though, sadly.
Oh, well, why not?
Well, only because he was paying a flying visit to the pub. He was only in on the first day. And then he was off, and I'd arranged to meet my brother for dinner, so I missed having a chat with Rodders, or G Rod, whatever you want to call him. But he was a very nice man.
For those who don't know, Graham Rodway is he's on various Racing Posts kind of content, and he does tend to make the odd, shall we say, bombastic opinion that might come out there, something that might rattle a few cages.
It's an odd one because he's not a bombastic personality. The words he uses tend to rattle people. Like the use of the word bounce, particularly in relation to Shishkin and even Constitution Hill, got people annoyed. But he was correct about the results of both of those races. He said Shishkin wouldn't win at Cheltenham, and then he said Constitution Hill would win, but he wouldn't win impressively.
You said that too?
Oh, exactly. And he said they made us guess the distance, and I thought less than 10 lengths was a good bet. He actually nailed the distance. Exactly. Okay. So you can't really knock the guy when he's actually getting the results there, can you?
And he also said that Aidan O'Brien is a bad trainer. No, I'm paraphrasing. Anyone could train those horses, wasn't it? Something along those lines.
Oh yeah, listen. Mr. Robbie's come out when you just see what he says in print, it does tend to raise the blood pressure a little bit. But he's an entirely different character in real life. If you speak to the guy, he's not like, let me tell you something that will shock you. He's very understated. But yes,
the other thing you have to factor into is like racing Twitter is probably the most volatile group of people. Yeah. Also, like, do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't take a whole pile to send them off.
Oh no, it doesn't. Know? No.
I know. Yeah, yeah, I lost my blue tick. I never had one, but you know, yeah. But I lost my blue tick. Yeah, I could have had one, right? I suppose we should probably start talking about the racing the weekend. Just a couple of notes from producer Mark. Keep an eye out for Punter's Panel. It has been filmed. He's teased it on his own Twitter page as well. It's going to be Ruby Walsh, Fran Berry, and a very special guest, Johnny Dineen, talking all things Punchestown. It'll be available on this podcast and on the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel as well. Link in the show notes, so be sure to head there and subscribe to that channel. So that's going to be really good. Looks like some good fun was had, and Smooth Tom was hosting that. Punchestown tickets, of course, Punchestown is next week. We're going to have daily pods for that. And if you'd like to go, well, usual job, quote tweet any tweet about the pod or write your own, include the hashtag FTHM, and you'll be in the draw to win tickets. We've already given tickets to Philip Mackey. Well done to Philip Mackey. You've won yourself tickets for next week from our last competition. Right, lads, let's talk racing on Saturday in the main is what we're going to look at. We're going to look at Ayr, their Grand National meeting, as well as the action over at Newbury. And we're going to start with the 3 mile. Now, I have a bit of an issue with these race titles, Ayr. The notions that they have with some of these, you can't just throw in the word champion willy-nilly. But anyway, the 3 mile novice champion handicap chase, Yeah, anyway. City Chief, Nico de Bonville and Nicky Henderson, who skipped all the major festivals, is a 2-1 favourite. Oscar Elite, 9-2, 5-1 Sail Away. Where it all began for Gordon Elliott, and Rory will tell you about the owner's connections with Scotland there. 11-2, 7-1 Temptation in Milan, and 8-1 in Big of the Rest. But before we go to Rory, on your return to the pod, Frank, off you go.
Yeah, I thought it was difficult enough to oppose Fair Darm, to be honest. Look, you have Pay the Piper, who was a massive eye catcher at Aintree in the Red Run when he was fifth, and Hassan Key was fourth in that race, and he's a pound lower than when beaten ahead at Ayr back in October. But Fair Darm's very lightly raced. He's only had 8 starts on the rules in total. 3 chase starts, won the first 2 of them in November. Won a Kempton handicap over 2 miles, 2 furlongs off mark of 120 very easily, beating Haddock's There's a bow, who was running off a mark of 126. That horse gone on and won his next 2 starts, is rated 146. Fair Darm then went to Newbury and won another good handicap over 2 miles, beating Akon Risk off a mark of 128. Of course, that horse went on and won the Betfair Hurdle. In third that day was That's All Right Gino. He was second in a good handicap at Cheltenham before finishing second in the Grade 2 Pendle and went off favourite for the plate when disappointing. And in fifth was Balco Coastal, who bolted up in the Kempton handicap at his next start and was second to Jory Clom in the Silly Isles before disappointing the Turners. So Farns was out really well. He was then given a break until 3 weeks ago when running in Ascot and was second off this mark, 136. He travelled really well there. Didn't finish unbelievably strongly. You wouldn't say it was, found nothing off the bridle. Black Jury just came and went by him and the last 100 yards, shaping like he may have needed a touch. Now Black Jury's gone and won a Plumpton again off £7 higher mark to Frank the Farm. Fair Darm gets to run off the same mark. He's a first time tongue tie. Maybe that was a slight issue with Ascot. Might turn you off him a little bit, but I just think he's really well handicapped. And I think the drawing ground will really suit him. So yeah, Fair Darm, I think you'll take a fair bit of beating, if there's a short enough price.
Were you, Frank, trying to be nice to me there and not mentioning that I previewed the completely wrong race, or you just weren't listening to me?
I actually wasn't listening to you, but it's not.
Both were insulting. I suppose that's probably more insulting. Yeah, I basically previewed the 150 there instead of the 115. Totally, I made a great spiel about it, and you were just like, "Yeah, PK just talking. I'll wait until he finishes, and then I'll start talking."
Well, to be fair, this is the first ITV race, so I assumed you got the running order correct and just went with it.
The running order I sent was correct. My presenting, horrific.
Oh, no, the running order wasn't correct. No.
Oh, okay. Go on.
No, the running order started with the 150. But Frank obviously assumed the running order is the ITV races.
I got both wrong. This is a nightmare. Right.
So I might have mentioned that there was a quite a good race at 115. But,
Yeah, I just love that Frank doesn't even listen to me. It's great.
You're just lucky Ruby isn't on. He'd absolutely roast you. Like, I was just
lucky. Okay, we're not talking about that race, no? Okay, fine, okay. Right, 115 in there.
Do you want to hug Ruby? Do you want to hug?
As Nina Carby said, what did she say about him?
There's a hug in him.
There's a hug in him.
There is a hug in him.
Yeah, we'll get on
that. The suggestion is there's one hug in him. And you've got to try very hard to find it. And you are not trying very hard at the moment, are you?
No. Okay, 115 in air. All the things that Frank said, Fair Darm, the one to beat. Rory, your take on it?
Listen, Frank's got a good point. Fair Darm, in terms of the collateral form of his races this season, looks the one to beat here. And you know that Dan Skelton's is the whole Skelton family. And it's very much a family operation there, isn't it? They know the time of day. They know that you're not going to get a bunch of Gordon Elliott horses and a bunch of Willie Mullins horses turning up at Ayr. But because Ayr are keen to promote the Scottish National Meeting, there's very good prize money on offer for races that end up being a lot weaker than they would be at other festivals. And Dan Skelton has a team of horses lined up for Ayr that are laid out for the meeting, and Fair Darm would appear to be in that category. As Frank said, he shaped as if he just needed the run at Ascot, either that or he just found his wind troubling him late on because he took a tongue tie on today. But this would be more suitable than a bit of a slog at Ascot last time out. He's a speed horse over this trip, and I think he's got a very good chance of winning this. You got a couple who come here after running in the Red Run at Aintree. Pay the Piper, I was with that. He ran a very strange race in that early in the straight, it looked like he was going to drop himself out and tail off. And you expected to see him pulling up before the last fence. And then when it panned back as he jumped the last, he was flying. And he finished really strongly to be fifth. No good for those of us who backed him each way four places. And gets a change of jockey here. I'm not entirely sure the change of jockey is a massive help. Again, it's Brian Hughes, champion jockey on board, but part of my reason for being with Pay the Piper last time out is that he's gained all but one of his wins under Danny McMenamin, who knows him really well. And I see no reason. I mean, to be honest, I thought he looked... I was a little bit worried about him before re-entry in that I wasn't sure that he was 100% genuine. And my view was that he looked more reliable, dropped back to 2 miles. Clearly, his win at Musselburgh was a return to form. His second at Doncaster, when he was just beaten by Calico, looks better now. Calico would have finished within 10 lengths of John Bond again at Aintree last time, but for falling at the last. And, you know, that makes him look okay. But I'm not sure that when the chips are down, he always applies himself. The way he ran at Aintree showed that he was holding a little bit back for himself. And then when the race was over, he finished strongly. And that's a little bit off-putting here. He also ran his only poor race of the season at Ayr early in the season when he made a bad mistake on the first circuit. So I thought Hassanki was the better of the two who ran in the Red Rum last time out. Again, he's backing up fairly quickly, but he's as tough as old boots, Hassanki. He's a sound jumper. He's not as talented as Pay the Piper, but he is very genuine. He's at the upper end of his mark now, a mark of 135, but he has slipped a little bit from the start of the season, and he was progressive last year. He's still only a seven-year-old. He will run a good race. Lewis Dobb, the £7 claimer, gets on well with him. I can see him hitting the frame, and he makes each way appeal, but it's possible that Frère Darm is just a different class to these at the weights.
Lovely. That is the 115, and thanks for saving me there, Frank, and not even mentioning my complete error. Frère Darm for Frank, 2-1. Rory kind of rowing in there. There has been an each-way move for Coast Guard Station in the last couple of days. That's when back Dennis O'Regan riding nines from 16th. We're recording on Friday morning, by the way, just in case reference for prices. Okay, the 150, the Novices Champion Handicap Chase. Go back about 5 minutes, and you'll hear my preview to this race. Purple Monkey Dishwasher, Frank Hickey. Yeah,
the name is really annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great shout, Frank. Well spotted that. Thanks for that. That's a great shout. At least you listened to my kind of mini rant. All right, screw you, Frank. Rory, what are your thoughts on this race, the 150?
Well, I like an outsider here. I go through it, and there are question marks about those at the top of the weights. The most interesting one of those at the top is Sail Away. Exactly the same reasoning. Dan Skelton. Sail Away, it looks like he's been campaigned with this in mind. He made his return from a long time off when second at Chepstow in March. He was weak in the market that day in a four-runner race and ran well to be second, ran pretty close to his best form, but give the impression he'd come on for that. Obviously, Harry Skelton's out this week, so Bridget Andrews coming in for a lot of the rides there. And you get a slight question as to, you know, when a horse has been ridden by one jockey for its last five or six starts, there's a slight question as to how it will react to a different jockey, but Bridget Andrews is perfectly capable. So Sail Away, I thought, was the most interesting of those at the head of the market. But I'm going to take a chance on Hold the Note right at the bottom. 10 stone 2, but he's out of the handicap because this being a limited handicap, he's out of the weights. He should be carrying 9 stone 12. So he's running off a mark of 116, having won the Red Rum series final, the Go North series final at Carlisle last time out. I thought that was a very good performance from him, in the context of the race. I think that he's been very cleverly campaigned by Ewan Willans. He was a talented horse in his younger days with Mick Shannon, but didn't really... He was placed at the Cheltenham Festival, wasn't he, as a young horse. Didn't really fulfil his potential. And then he went to Ewan Willans, and he's had a mixed career there. But I reckon that Ewan knows exactly what he's doing with the horse. He stuck a visor back on last time out, and he came back to something like his, well, not quite his best form, but he came significantly back to form to win that by 7 lengths from a horse in second who was a massive gamble, Elion, who'd clearly been laid out for it as well. Those finals are always competitive races. The Go North series, because they're obviously limited to stables in the north, and the prize money is good for the finals, they should be solid form. I thought that was a decent race in the context of it. The winner won by 7 lengths. They were well clear of the front two in what looked a competitive race. He's still well handicapped in his old form. He's still only a 9-year-old holding note. And I thought another significant factor in terms of, is he coming here as an afterthought or has this been a plan? The owners are sponsors in this card, long-term sponsors as well. Jordan Electrics So Holdenut was owned by various members of the Jordan family, B. Jordan, Brian Jordan, S. Jordan, and N. McConnell. And they have some horses on the flat. Jordan Electrics, where they sponsor, or they've got a horse called Jordan Electrics on the flat, who runs in similar colors. And I thought it was interesting that they've been sponsors on this car. They sponsored the next race. And it looks to me like the plan for Holdenut has been there for a long time to pick up that prize at Carlisle and come here for this contest with a visor on again. I think although he had become a little bit disappointing, they clearly found the key to him. The headgear perked him up enormously last time out, and he won't be out of his depth here. I know he's stepping up markedly in grade, but this is a horse who was capable. You know, he's run very well in grade two company in his younger days. And it's not like he's a veteran now. He's still only a 9-year-old. So I think he could be a bit of a surprise package here at 25-1 or thereabouts.
It's exactly the price as we record on Friday morning, as I mentioned. By the way, this race, you can pop into a shop as a money back race, and money back if you're second or third. That's a retail exclusive. All right, Frank, big price there from Rory. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, very interesting case he's made there. I was going to side with Temptation in Milan. He's a half-bred princely player in King's Temptation. And we're both stayers who really appreciate a good ground. Both of them actually only ever won on good ground or better. And Temptation Land, look, he's been kept busy since last July. He's won 10 times since. He did manage to win a Listowel in September off just 97 over 2.5 miles over fences. And he finished second on his next three starts before unseating at Leopardstown over Christmas in a decent handicap that was won by Seddon, who obviously went on to win the plate at Cheltenham. He's won at Navan off a mark of 112 in decent ground over 3 miles. The second there has been second twice since, and the fourth one next time out. He was then third in that good novice handicap chase at Navan off a mark of 120, but the heavy ground wouldn't have been ideal for him there. He's back in better ground here. He's just 2 pounds higher than that Navan third, and he only carries 10 stone 8. And of course, Philip Burns, I think he's excellent value for a 5-pound claim as well. So Temptation Milan for the shrewd Charles Burns for me.
Is he shrewd? Charles Burns. Okay. Is he shrewd? Shrewd. Yes, he's very shrewd. Okay, that is Temptation Milan for Frank and Holdenut for Rory. Put you down as each way on both of those lads.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, 225 is the Scottish champion hurdle. I don't mind them saying champion here because they put Scottish. But when they just say champion novice, and it's a handicap over 3 miles, get in the sea. This is the Scottish champion hurdle. This is a very competitive handicap hurdle. Colonel Mustard, 9-2, has been to Scotland before. 11-2, Soaring Glory. Rhubarb, 13-2. Nemean Lion has been backed for Kerry Lee, now 7s from 8. 7-1, Lita Sud. Anna Benina for John McConnell, who's got history in this race. And Salsada are both 8-1. And Milkwood have been a bit of an each-way mover at 10-1. All right, Frank, we've seen all these before in these big races, right back from the Great One through to today or to Saturday. What are your thoughts?
Look, you can kind of make a case for nearly everything. But I'm going to take a chance on Salsada for Brian Ellison. I was progressive on the flat in 2020. Winner made at Newcastle and won handicaps at Haylock and Ayr of 77 and 79. Was beaten just over 3 lengths in a 10 furlong listed race at Doncaster Day in that season. She began to have issues with the stalls then in 2021. Didn't go in on a number of occasions, but she did win her hurdles debut at Sedgefield on good ground. She was then turned over twice at odds on before running well on the flat at Salisbury at last June over a 6 miles off a mark of 92. She was beaten. So that was the help there for her. I think she was beaten under 2 lengths in fourth. She was off till January when stepped up to grade two company at Doncaster. I thought she ran way above her official rating of 118 at the time when she was second behind Epitant. Look, Epitant won as she liked. But she had a couple of nice horses in behind her that day. The handicappers reacted and bumped her up 12. But at the same time, when you look what she's capable of producing on the flat, there still might be a little bit of scope off that mark. And Patrick Wedge takes off 5 pounds. I think he's a very good claimer. He's operating at a 22% strike rate this season. I just thought good ground, solid pace day match, hopefully, would suit Salsada, and I'd take a chance on her.
Okay, Salsada, number 10 in the card. Each way?
Yeah.
Two or four places online, so that's good. Rory?
Well, I am, of course, the first fully paid-up member of the Colonel Mustard fan club, outside his immediate connections, of course. And he's got a massive chance here. He missed the county hurdle because he struck into himself when second in the Moor battle when last seen. The question with him is what the ground is going to be like. There was a forecast suggesting a bit of rain around tomorrow when air, but it could be drying up all the time. So we'll see what the going is like on Friday. Nemean Lyon's already out of the race, by the way.
Is he?
And that might well be ground related because all his form has been in sort of good softer ground. But that's true of Colonel Mustard as well. So if it does come up quick, I think Lorna's got a question, and she's got a mentor in a Grade One next week, of course, at Punchestown. So there might be a concern about the ground here. His very best form is coming good to soft, but I think if it was quicker than that, it might be a question mark. He always handles heavy ground pretty well. But if Lorna deems the ground to be okay for him, this is a perfect race for him. I've always thought that. He doesn't want to be left in front too long. He's a little bit tricky, Colonel. He just thinks he's done enough when he hits the front, and he needs to be delivered late. That's difficult to do at Kelso, and he ended up being left in front too early, having absolutely tanked through the contest. He traded at 3-1 on in running. He fared much the best of those who raced up with the pace. They probably did too much work on the front end that day, but he was still cruising, and he just got mugged by the winner. Essentially, he needs a well-run race, but one where, you know, a sharp turn of foot will win it. And this contest is ideal for that. The winner frequently is produced after the last hurdle. It's a sharp test at 2 miles and good ground, and it suits a horse with a bit of boot, which Colonel Mustard does. So if the ground is okay for him, I expect him to prove his mark of 1.46 is more than fair. If it turns out to be quicker than that, I would be inclined to take it. I'm disappointed with the price given his form off late, but Soaring Glory is a horse I've always liked, and it's been really frustrating to see him campaign because he wants good or quicker ground. Got absolutely no doubt about it. And he's had an odd campaign again this season. He ran on softish ground over fences at Carlisle and absolutely hated that. He won the Befford Hurdle a couple of years ago. He then ran a perfectly respectable fifth in the race, beating 4.5 lengths last season. And again, his latest run came on soft ground at Newbury, which didn't really suit him. He got back on track to some degree, finishing fifth there. But he's so much better given a quick surface that if it comes up good or even good to firm for this, my confidence in him would be massively increased. And I would probably... Well, you know, if I thought it was genuinely on the quick side, I'd probably even favour him at the prices over Colonel Mustard because it would be an unknown for Lorna Fowler's gelding. Whereas for Soaring Glory, it's what I've been waiting about 2 years for. Again, he's very likely race for a horse of his age. He's bred to improve with age. All the fame and glory seem to only really come into their own a little bit later in life. And although he's had an odd year or so, Soaring Glory, I'm convinced that he's more than capable of winning a big handicap of 1.43. That's £4 lower than when he ran in the Befford Hurdle last year. Ironically, it would have stood him down to the ground this year. It was almost firm ground in the Befford Hurdle this time around, but no sign of Soaring Glory, sadly. And of course, he won that race impressively off 1.33 as a novice. So he would be the one that I'd want to be with if there's no rain at all.
Okay. You're making my job very hard here.
I know.
Okay, so I have to cut up these snippets, right? And I have to put them into a video for the shops. And I basically have to go, here's Rory's selection. I'm going to put you down for Soaring Glory because I think it's air and it's the Scottish Grand National Meeting. It's always quick. It's just always quick round.
Okay, right?
That's what I'm doing.
Let's assume it's going to be good. I'm just going to absolutely pour down tomorrow morning now.
The video will still go out and you'll look at Numpty. Right, at the 3 o'clock, I'm really intrigued, guys, to see which of these horses is a future champion, because this is the future champion novice chase. Balco Coastal heads the market. He ain't no champion, folks. He's 15-8. Pernicky Henderson, Nico de Bonville, 9-2. That's All Right, Gino. Not a champion. 9-2. Thunder Rock, 5-1. Unexpected Party. Tell Me Something, Girl has been backed. This is a chase. She's 10-6-1. 9-1. Hang in there, and 20-1. Richmond Lake. All right, Frank Hickey. Which of these will be the future champion?
Yeah, Jesus, I'm going to be some amount of champions. I'm actually thinking there, if I ever become a very wealthy man, PK, I'm just going to sponsor a series at like Hexham and call it like the, you know, future champions, you know.
Northern Series, yeah. Future Champion.
Not 110.
Borders Champion.
Borders, I mean, highest altitude race course Future Champion. There you go.
Just to know, yeah.
I'd have to run that at Bath then, wouldn't you?
Oh, is that Bath higher? I thought Hexham was the highest.
Well, maybe Bath is just the highest flat course, but...
Okay. Go Google while Frank gives us the winner there. Go on.
Yeah, look, I think it's difficult enough to oppose Balco Coastal, to be honest. He did underperform the turners, but that was a messy race. They went to no gallop, and I don't think soft ground maybe is ideal for him either. Prior to that, he'd given the mighty Jerry Kalam a fright in the Grade 1 Scilly Isles, and I think that form is fairly solid. Obviously, everyone knows my love for Jerry Kalam. And prior to that, Balco Coastal had slammed solo Kempton off a mark of 133 over Christmas. I think getting back on better ground will help. And that Scilly Isles form is the best form in the race, I think. You've got That's All Right Gino disappointed in the play, gone off favourite, and you know, a few more in there. But I think if Balco Coastal comes back to that Scilly Isles form, he'll be tough to beat.
Okay, favourite. Rory? Oh, he's muted himself. Oh, look at that. I'm not the only one who's Googling there where the highest race course in the UK is. Go on.
I have been Googling the highest race course in the UK. And I can tell you that if you had bet on Hexham to be the highest race course in the UK, you'll be delighted to hear that it is, according to an article I'm reading.
Come on.
20 feet higher than Bath.
Ooh, well, still higher. Still higher. That's all that matters.
Sadly, 50 feet lower than Exeter.
Oh, really?
There you go.
The Exeter. All right, okay. Disappointed there. Okay. So race courses with X are very high in the UK.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah.
There we go.
Those are the rules.
Your thoughts on the Future Champion Novice Chase?
If I can find the Future Champion Novice Chase now again.
Oh, you won't find a Future Champion in it, I can tell you that.
No, maybe. Well, this is true. But, you know, it's
you have a little bit of an issue with that in the name title.
Yeah, imagine it's a Scottish nationalist thing and you'll feel a lot better about it.
Oh, God.
tell me something, girl, is interesting in here given connections. But I guess Kenny Alexander, proud Scot, will want to have something to run on a big day like this. I don't think I've ever seen a group of horses jump as badly in my life as the quartet who ran in the Irish Stallion Farms EBF Mares Beginners Chase at Nace in January when Tell Me Something Girl beat Onsty. The form has worked out okay, but it really was a comedy of errors. It was just an appalling display of jumping all round. She jumped a bit better last time out, which was put in her place by Brides Hill, who's underrated Brides Hill. But in saying that, I still think that the gives Tell Me Something Girl a little bit to find here. This is a tough race, and Balco Coastal is overrated on his second to Jerry Kalam, in my view, because I think that race was always going to suit Balco Coastal ideally, and it was a test for Jerry Kalam dropping back in trip on quickish ground, you know, to get him to peak essentially, and I think the rating Balco Coastal gets for that flatters him slightly. That's All Right Gino, I can give chances to. I thought he'd been shaping up really well until stuffed in the plate when held up. And he was favourite for the plate. You can't get into that race if you're held up in the first place. Also, the soft ground, I know he's run on heavy ground before, but he just seems a better horse on a slightly better surface these days. So I'm inclined to ignore that run from That's All Right Gino. I'd give him a chance on his... on his previous form, and you can give Thunder Rock a big chance on what he'd done earlier in the season. He was impressive when winning off a mark of 142 at Ascot back in November. He did that on the bridle, beating Solo. That form has worked out pretty well with Solo winning a Grade 2 since, but Solo's a funny horse in that he only seems to come alive at Kempton in the spring. And Thunder Rock was you could make excuses for him in the Dipper at Cheltenham. That form has worked out very well. And obviously he was behind Balco Coastal at Sandown, and then was a bit disappointing, again, taking on the real whacker last time out. I can see him bouncing back, but you have to forgive pretty much everything in this race something to give it a big chance of winning. I would come down on Dats Allright Gino for the sake of having a selection in the race, but I wouldn't be in a massive rush to have a punt.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's a pass. No future champion. Ferrari in the future champions, obviously. I think I do have a bee in my bonnet about this. Right, we'll move on to the big race at Ayr, the big race of the whole day. It is the Scottish Grand National.
The Scottish champion Grand National.
Scottish current Grand National winner. Yeah, well, we don't have the current winner. We've got the trainer who won last year, of course, Win My Wings, with Christian Williams. He's got Kitty's Light, who's 9-2. Mombeg Genius was well backed. Of course, we're going six places each way in this, by the way. 4-1 Mombeg Genius. That was the big market mover during the week for Jonjo O'Neill Jr. and Senior, off the back of his excellent form boost at a different national. 8-1 Your Own Story for the Grand National winning team of Lucinda Russell and Derek Fox. That'll be some double. Fleur of Scotland, Sandy Thompson trains, and Ray Green. He's had, was it Merigo won this a couple of times?
Yeah,
Merigo. 11-1. So we've seen those colours in the winner's enclosure. Big prices, the rest. Frank, I'm going to go back to you because this is your bread and butter. Staying handicap chases. Yeah, this is where you come into your own.
Do you want to give us another blast of that Norwegian accent, yeah?
Where are you starting? Like, I could have done my Christian Williams Welsh accent if you want to go. I think,
go on, give it a go. Go on.
Christian Williams.
Here. That's embarrassingly bad.
Go on the valley.
Conor Moore's job is safe enough anyway for the time being.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Yeah.
Look, look, you can see the case for Mombeg Genius. Look, he's won a cracker in the Ultimate for one. You know, so inexperienced, and the form's obviously been strongly franked. He does have to prove he stays 4 miles. You think he probably will, and he's the, you know, the improving novice in the field that could blow the race apart. Kitty's Light in here, second to Win My Wings last year off, £3 higher, got back to winning ways in the Eider. He has to be a big player as well. I'd give mention to Melina Girl. I thought she did very well when winning the Ulster National down Patrick 3 weeks ago, stepping up to 3.5 miles for the first time. And that was off a mark of 128. She runs here off a mark of 137. She'd have a good chance if it doesn't come too soon. It's a relatively quick turnaround. But I'm going to take a chance on one at a price down the bottom, Magna Sam. Look. Oh, have I robbed it for you, have I?
Get on now, lads. Get on now.
Oh, the disappointment. Yeah. Oh, and it probably was Rory's turn to go first, too.
I know, yeah. I know. That's true. There you go.
Look, he's shown nothing in bumpers going way back, but he did win a point about 4 years ago in a 100 chase at Ludlow, albeit when the main protagonist fell. Showing nothing then in points in 100 chase for a while until he moved to Sophie Leach and won at Musselburn in December 2021, over 3 miles of a mark of 109. Boldy up by 41 lengths, followed up then the following February off a mark of 115, winning by 18 lengths before finding third at Carlisle off 1-2-2, and was pulled up in Aintree in May that year. Has switched to Alistair Ralph in the interim and made his debut for him in the Edinburgh National Musselburgh in February off a mark of 120 over 4 miles. Was actually backed at big prices that day. I was working, I was like, can't really see it, but look, it's one fine style, actually. Prominent, travel well, jumped very well, and found plenty to win by 4 lengths. And then when you look at the form, the second Captain Collistock won at Cheltenham earlier in the week. The third Flower of Scotland, the one you did your Norwegian accent for, won the Borders National's previous start. The fourth Just Don't Know won a match. Look, it was only a match, and the other one fell. And the fifth Truckers Lad won the West Wales National a few weeks ago. And even the sixth, the Wolf, was fourth in a strong Ascot handicap. And was second in the Class 3 handicap at Ludlow last time. The form's fairly solid. Magnus Sam got £5 for that. He's effectively up 8 because he's £3 out of the handicap. But he's far from exposed for horses of his age, particularly at marathon trips. And he seemed to improve for the switch to Alistair Ralph as well. It looks like he's kept him fresh for this. So I think his price ranged from about 16-1 to 22-1. Yeah, so with the extra places on offer, I'd definitely be having a few bob each way on him. He'll carry 10-2 as well, and he'd be prominent, and he might take a bit of pegging back, actually.
Rory, what do you fancy in the Scottish Grand National?
I quite fancy, this is a bit left field, I'll grant you, but okay. I fancy a horse called Magna Sam.
All right, tell us about him.
He's got a very mixed record. Loves the Scottish air, this horse. Oh, I mean, the question I've had with Magna Sam is there something about Musselburgh? Because he's won well at Musselburgh 3 times, and it's a long time since he's shown any form left-handed. In fact, his form on left-handed tracks under rules is very poor. But I was reminded that he won a point-to-point at Cockleborough, which is a big galloping left-handed track.
And just make up point-to-point tracks, sorry.
It's a new one. It's one of the newest point-to-point tracks. Right? I helped make the fences there. Did you know?
Wow.
I was going to lose it. I went down and helped with that as a little project. Simon Clace of Cheltenham fame was clerk of the course at Cockleborough when I went to point there and took my kids when they're very, very little. But he won a point there. So going left-handed isn't an issue. It's just that his form has been very patchy. But he bolted up, obviously at Musselburgh last season for Sophie Leach. And then he's shown even better form, stepped up markedly in trip. To win the Scottish champion Grand National Trial, the Edinburgh National last time out, and Frank's already pointed out how well that form has worked out. You can go further back in the field. Innisfree Lad was a winner next time out as well. Plenty of good runs. It looked a really strong race on paper. I liked the form at the time, and I backed Trucker's Lodge at Nick's start. And then of course he just needed a slight drop in grade to get his head back in front. The form is really solid. It's just a slight question mark whether Magnus Sam is going to be as effective at Ayr as he is at Musselburgh. But he's got everything I'm looking for in a Scottish National horse. I want something that's going to be up there. It's going to jump well. It's going to be able to take a prominent position and stays all day. And it's not, to be honest, every year you look at this race and horses take sort of two or three of the four boxes that you need there. And it's rare that you'll get everything ticking all the boxes. And Magnus Sam, obviously the question mark is how solid the form is and whether he can repeat it elsewhere. Aside from that, he's lightly raced. He showed last time out that he's clearly a thorough stayer. He's with an underrated yard at the moment. The winning jockey from last time is back on again. I think there's a lot of positives there. I'm not sure I'd be piling on each way. I think he's one of those, you want to back him each way to get your stake back, but I'd be heavier on the win with him because obviously it's a step up in class and he's out of the handicap. But being out of the handicap has never been a bar to success in the Scottish National before. It tends to be a really tough race for top weights and I'm always starting at the bottom of the handicap and trying to find something that will come alive around here.
How far was Iris de Balm out of the handicap when he won it?
He was a long way out. He was well over a stone out of the weights when he won it for
John Curran.
John Martin Curran. So it's never better. 8 stone 2 was his long handicap weight. Joe's Edge was 9.9. And you go back over the years and you find quite a lot of horses who are, you know, on 9 stone-ish. Winning this, you don't tend to. I mean, you do get the occasional horse who's able to carry a big weight, but historically, low weights and horses who are able to get on the front end here. I've never really thought that Ayr is the biggest test of stamina when the ground's good. Horses tend to sort of drop out of contention. Not as stamina comes into play. I don't know whether they get bored going round behind, but the field tends to get whittled down. But as long as you keep jumping and say, I remember a horse called again going back to the Bradford's horse called Off the Brew, who would have had 7 stone something in this and finished third behind I think it was Captain Dibble of the Tristan Davises, and he was miles out of the handicap. But he just, you know, he just got a prominent position and just jumped and stayed. And that's, that counts for an awful lot here.
You know, the handicapper must have given him some nudge. Right, that's 2 votes for Magnus Sam and the Scottish Grand National. Brilliant stuff. That's the jump racing done. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back looking ahead to Newbury's flat card, the Greenham card.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+BeGambleAware.org.
And we're back, and we're looking ahead to Newbury's Greenham card. A lot of these races, Dubai Duty Free, etc., etc. It used to be the John Porter, the 130, and now the Dubai Duty Free Finest Surprise Stakes. And now Hurricane Lane is the favourite. He's odds on a 4-5. He's drifted slightly from 8-11. he's the type of horse that I'm expecting both Rory and Frank to take on. 92 Mojo Star for the Amo Racing team. Kia Jarabchin has had about 50 winners in the last few days. Israr for John and Thady Gosden is 13-2. Max Vega 7-1 and 12-1. Lone Eagle in new colours. Frankie Dettori riding for his good mate Mark Chan. That's a 12-1 shot. Frank, there's no chance you're putting up Hurricane Lane. You're going to take him on.
Yeah, like during the week, we caught him in. But then looking at us, like, don't get me wrong, Charlie Appy had a very good week at Newmark, but he had a couple of high-profile ones turn over, mainly Creative Force. And I was just looking at Hurricane Lane, and you're going back to the three-year-old season. Like last year, he was obviously turned over in the Hardwick and disappointing in the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud. Turnover odds on in both races. And yeah, I don't take a chance on Mojo Star. Like you could probably make a case for nearly all of them on some level, but Mojo Star only had the one run last year. When second in the Gold Cup, beaten half a length by Kiprias. He travelled really well that day. It was a massive performance. And you go back to his three-year-old season, he was second in the ledger behind Hurricane Lane. Look, Amo Racing, they're absolutely flying it. So you'd imagine the fact he's been off so long that he'd be fairly, you know, ready to go. And yeah, I'd probably take him at the prices. I wouldn't go crazy, but I have a small bet on him.
Juice Mark is very impressed with your French pronunciation there. You've been practicing?
Did he?
Yeah, he commented, yeah. Said that you've been practicing down Centre Parks.
No. The only other French I use normally is when I'm driving in the M50.
Sacre bleu.
Yeah.
Something a little bit tastier. Beep, beep. All right, Mojo. Mojo Star for Frank. Rory De Laurier again. There's no way you're putting up Hurricane Lane. I just know it.
No, absolutely not. And again, Frank has touched on this. I'm a big advocate. If you're judging 5 year olds, you've got to sort of take their current rating based on their 4 year old form. The idea of extrapolating what they did as 3 year olds when they were getting a big fat allowance as well is a dangerous thing to do. And obviously, you know, you'll get horses who, you know, things haven't gone right for through the year. And that's probably the case with Hurricane Lane last year. Just the two starts in 2022. He's clear on ratings here. If you're looking at time form ratings, for example, but his time form rating is coming from his St. Ledger win. And I would, on that basis, I'd much rather be with Mojo Star, who doesn't have an awful lot of fines. Well, it's 2.5 length or so, 2¾, I suppose he was beaten. But he's shown last year that he's a better horse. Again, he hardly had he's only had the one run last season, but he still ran the race of his life to be second in the Gold Cup. You can argue that almost 2.5 miles and he's dropping back in trip here. Well, he's had two runs in his life beyond a mile and a half. So it's not like he's a thorough plodder. He's a horse with a lot of class, Mojo Star, as you have to be second in a Derby and a St. Ledger and a Gold Cup. You've got to be very classy and adaptable. And he makes a hell of a lot more appeal than the favourite at the prices. And I'd be happy to take a pretty big swing at him, to be perfectly honest. I don't think he'd be in... He was due to run, of course, at Nottingham against Trushan and was taken out because of the heavy ground that day. He won't be short of a run. What we've seen in the last couple of weeks is that the Amo Racing horses tend to be very well forward anyway. I don't know to what extent the older horses go away and have a bit of pre-training. I suspect that Richard Hannah's probably had Mojo Star for a while, but it certainly is the case with the youngsters that they're all in together and they're pre-trained and then sent off to their professional yards, and they tend to be ready first time up. So I don't see that fitness is going to be a major issue. Yes, this is going to be slightly short of his best trip, but he's got a lot of class. And aside from Hurricane Lane, he's clearly a better horse than the rest of his opposition. So I'd be more than happy to take a chance. Obviously, you know, if you go back a couple of seasons, Lone Eagle's got a big chance in his three-year-old form, but he did fracture a fetlock at the end of his three-year-old season. I think any horse coming back from injury, again, you can't judge them on the form they showed pre-injury. You've got to have a look at what they do afterwards. Even if they come sound again, they tend to be slightly different physiologically, and their ability changes as a result, sometimes only by small degrees, sometimes by a fair bit more. And he really only had one half decent piece of form last season, and that was when making the running at a slow pace in the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud, and I wouldn't say that solid form either. So although he's changed yards, And I'm sure that Mark Chan's paid a few bob for him. Blinkers go on the first time. You can see why he might bounce back to form, but I think he's got plenty to prove based on what he showed last season. So Mojo Star, he's 9-2 best price in the market. I don't know, what's the Paddy Power price at the moment? 9-2?
9-2, we're best price.
Listen, I think that's almost a gift.
Don't think any prizes for guessing where the nap might be for Rory this weekend. Right, move on to the Dubai Duty Free, formerly known as the Fred Darling, the 205, or registered as the Fred Darling, the 205 at Newbury. Now, there's been money for Remarquee and significant cash for Remarquee for Rafe Beckett and Rob Hornby has more than halved in price since we went up on Thursday, 7s into 3-1. Bridestones for John and Thady Gosden and William Buick rides in the good office. John and Thady have got a few here, 7-2, 5-1 Magical Sunset for Amo Racing, 1-2 for Amo Racing. They've also got Olivia Miralda. Frankie rides Soul's Sister, also for John and Thady Gosden. That's a big drifter. Rory, straight back to you. A few interesting market moves here. Looks open.
Yeah, listen, I would pretty much never have a bet in the Fred Darling. It's just everything that doesn't work for me. Racing wise, great race to have. You know, it's setting up the season. It's a classic trial. You get an idea of what the pecking order is, who's trained on well from 2 to 3. But I'm in the dark with that kind of thing as someone who relies on what's been shown on the race course. And it's clear from the early betting that Remarquee is expected to have improved an awful lot on her sole start as a juvenile. I should expect with her pedigree, she's by Kingman out of a very smart or very useful Champs-Élysées mare called Regarde. Rafe Beckett knows the family well too, and she won. It was just a run of the mill novice, if you like, that she won a first time out. But she looked good, and she could prove to be a lot better than the bare form. I would respect the money for her, but I'll be keeping my hands in my pocket here. The others that are quite interesting, I think Olivia Miralda is quite interesting, starting out for Roger Varian. We saw Michael Callahan did well with the Amo Racing horses last year as 2-year-olds, but they've been happy to move a few of those on to other trainers. She was disappointing on her final start, Olivia Miralda, but her form through the rest of the season has stacked up well enough. And, you know, she's quite interesting starting out for Roger Varian. Whether she's such an obvious one to train on from 2 to 3, I'm not sure. But she'd have chances on the best of her 2-year-old form. And obviously, Magical Sunset's got a similar sort of pedigree, also being by Kodiak, for Richard Hannon, who unleashed the Nell Gwynn winner on the back of a novice win at Newmarket last year. So, she's interesting as well, but it's just these are not betting races for me because there's so much potential for improvement for some of them, and then there are plenty of these who look promising at 2 who just won't have grown an inch over the winter, and you'd suddenly be going cold on them if you saw them in the paddock. I don't have the benefit of knowing how they're working. I don't have the benefit of looking at them in the paddock, and therefore I know that I'm massively behind the 8 ball on this, so I tend not to get involved.
That's an offload in rugby parlance to you, Frank Hickey.
Yeah, a bit, look, Brightstones is a filly I like. She was impressed when debut Yarmouth in October over a mile on soft ground, but she's by Teofilo out of White Moonstone, who was 4 from 4, only raced as a juvenile, but she won over a mile in the Filly's Mile too. So you imagine Brightstones might be finding the 7 furlongs a touch sharp. She was one that's kind of on my watch list for developing into an Oaks filly maybe. And the one I liked is Remarquee. I'm a bit gutted there now because I hadn't actually got on yet. And I see Hugh Taylor's tipped it up, and hence the move. He's tipped it up for the Guineas itself as well. Look, Rafe Beckett did win this in 2014, I think, with Red Start. 2014, 15, sometime around then. Look, she was very impressive winning at Salisbury, I thought, beating Breeson. Now, she was getting a fair bit of weight that day, but like when it all kind of kicked in about a furlong out, she really motored home. And like, look, you don't know what the other division was like, but she was 2 seconds faster than the second division, and she generated a really good time figure for first time out as well. As I said, the form hasn't worked out great, but the front two were miles clear, the third and so forth, so I wouldn't be hung up about the form. And she was the one that stood out to me, just a big cut at this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, with her, the point that Frank makes there about Bridestones having already won over a mile and have a pedigree that's full of stamina, would make you worried about the 7 furlongs. But I think it's also a bit of a case for a Remarque as well. I didn't realize why the market move had happened, and that makes sense. She's got a pedigree that makes you think the mile of the guineas will suit her really well. This 7 furlongs could be in the short side for her as well, even though she won on seven at seven on debut. On pedigree, she will definitely stay. She'll probably stay a mile and a quarter in pedigree. So 7 furlongs, first time out, when it's not a massive target for her, she might she might just find out on the sharp side. If you haven't backed her for the guineas, but you were interested, this might be you, Frank. It might be worth actually hovering over the anti-post market for the guineas if she gets beaten at the weekend, and taking a chance. Richard yeah. Hannan was making the point there when he won the he was upset to have won the Nell Gwyn because all his 1,000 guineas winners have been beaten. In their prep races. He wasn't really upset, but he was pointing out they've all got turned over, and it's not a massive negative to get beaten first time out, particularly when you're looking to peak for the guineas. So if you've missed the boat with Remarque, but you agree with the logic that she's an interesting one for the guineas, it might just be worth if this turns out to be a messy race, particularly and her stamina doesn't come into play, it might be worth seeing who overreacts and pushes her out again for the guineas, assuming she does get beaten. And of course, if she was punted early in the week, there's a chance that she becomes easier to back on the day for this race anyway. So again, you might want to wait and see if you get a bit of a drift.
That does tend to happen when these early moves on Thursday, Friday do tend to kind of correct themselves. All right, we'll go on to the Greenham Stakes. This is headed in the market by Chaldean, cracking 2-year-old Dewhurst winner, Andrew Balding and Frankie Dettori in the Judmont Silks. There's been good money for him, 8-11 to 8-13, probably because what happened at Newmarket, where the horse he beat twice last year, Indestructible, was an impressive winner of the Craven. Knight unbeaten for Simon and Crisford is 11-2, 12-1 Theory of Everything for John Thady Gosden, Rav Havlam rise with Frankie on Chaldean. It's 14-1 and bigger the rest. So there's plenty of big prizes here. Again, pop into a shop and you get money back if you're second or third in this race, regardless of what wins the race. That's a retail exclusive. Rory, same boat here as the Fred Darling?
Roughly the same boat, although we know more about the colts than we do about the fillies. The standard required in the Greenham tends to be higher than that in the Fred Darling. And a lot of these sort of classic aspirant fillies tend to only come to themselves in the spring, whereas you do get a bit of a pecking order. And Chaldean or Chaldean, well, he's generally called Chaldean, I think, but Chaldean makes a bit more sense in terms of trying to work out where his name might come from. I liked him enormously last year. I loved his debut. He was only fifth on debut, and he's attracted support, which is unusual for one of Andrew Balding's first time out, because although he does get winners, they tend to be winners at biggish prices on debut, and they come on a lot for a run. I really like the way he shaped over 6 furlongs that day. He then won over this course of distance on his next start and just went from strength to strength from there. He beat Indestructible in the Acomb. He then beat Indestructible by further in the Champagne Stakes at Doncaster on his next start. And I was all over him for the Dewhurst, I wouldn't say he won in devastating style, but he progressed a little bit more and found plenty for pressure to hold off Royal Scotsman that day. He's a very, very straightforward colt. You know, he's gonna jump out the stalls and get rolling. I love his attitude. I love his temperament. He was very laid back last year, whereas normally a colt who's capable of doing what he did, they tend to be, you know, they tend to be very well developed and they tend to be on their mettle as 2-year-olds. And everything about him in terms of his demeanor suggests that he would be better as a 3-year-old. As I said, I like the fact that he is so laid back. That might mean he's not 100% fit first time out, but he's got the right sort of setup here. This course suits him really well, as he's shown. And he's got the ideal draw, I think, in stall 7, because he's going to jump out in front. You don't want to be on the wing as a rule at Newbury. You want to be coming up the centre of the course. He just strikes me as being much more likely to show his form than most of these. The one at a price that I thought could surprise was Isaac Shelby, who looked good in his first couple of starts and then was off the track for 3 months and disappointed in the Dewhurst on his final start. So he's clearly held by by the favourite here, but that wasn't his running based on what he'd shown in the Superlative Stakes on his previous start. That form's taken a few knocks, but he looked a really nice prospect both there and when winning at this track on his debut. You wouldn't get many Brian Meehan's winning first time out either, so that was a really good sign. He clearly had a setback mid-season to not be seen to October, and it's difficult to know how well he's going to train on, but I thought he was interesting at a biggish price. But it'll be difficult for difficult looking past Chaldean. Again, I'm not going to be punting him heavily at 8 to 11. Yeah.
8-13.
Well, yeah, 8 to 11 is the top price in the market, and you know, you'd expect him to win at that. But essentially, if you've backed him for the guineas, you're just looking for a solid performance here.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Chaldean. Yeah, I think you're right there. A member of ancient people who lived in Chaldea between 800 BC and subsequently ruled Babylonia between the years 625 to 539 BC. Frank Hickey.
Yeah, look, it's very difficult to oppose, really. Not really a betting prospect for me. Look, everything Rory said there, he's a big player in the guineas this year. Look, Knight is a bit of a danger. He's been impressive in both starts. Really liked the way he won at Yarmouth on debut, and he won the Group 3 Horace Hill here over 7 furlongs on heavy ground. He'd probably be the main one, I think, against him if you want to have an each-way bet. But look, I think Chaldean will win and just sit back and kind of take notes and see if there's anything comes out of the race behind him.
But, strike two that you don't listen to me or Rory. We changed the pronunciation and you just flat in our face said, no, I'm not going to
stick. I'm sticking with my Chaldean. Like you,
all right. All right,
that's a third pronunciation. You've got Chaldean, you've got Chaldean, and then you've got Chaldean. So that's
the favourite in the Greenham is what I'm going to call it. Right, the Spring Cup, you'll definitely have a tip here for us, folks. This is a good quality mile handicap. LATAM, who we saw rattle home in the Irish Lincoln for Chris Hayes and William Haggis. Tom Marcand, as you'd expect, takes over 2-1 favourite. There can't have been too many 2-1 favourites in this race in the past. Al Hreb is 15-2. You've got Atrium for Charlie Fellows, who's 8-1. 10-1 Saga. Benny de la Sayette, nice winner during the week at the Craven meeting. For Jonathan Eddie Gosden trains. Dawn of Liberation, 10-1, as is Jimi Hendrix, and 11-1 for a bit of brunch. All right, Frank Hickey, this is you'll have a tip here. You will.
Yeah, you know the way I'd like to try and find one at a price in these races, but I just don't think he can go against LATAM. Look, he was very impressive winning the Irish Lincoln off Mark of 87. You go back and watch it. He's traveling really well in behind the whole way, and Chris Hayes, wasn't it, rollers?
Yep.
Which is looking, waiting for a gap. And eventually a kind of a little gap comes and he pulls his left and's running on, and he absolutely flies home to nail Saltonstall late. Even when you're looking at the section, he gets a decent enough upgrade. He's only gone up £5 for that. I still think he has to be well treated off American 92. And even though he's favourite and a relatively sharp price, I don't think he can be taking him on considering the way he won at the Curragh.
I would have made it a big price if you tipped him, to be fair, Frank. That's really interesting. Rory?
Yeah, I went through this looking for alternatives to LATAM, and yeah, I decided that on first glance, I thought I want to be against this at around sort of 2-1, 9-4, because this is always a really competitive race. And although it's going to be softish ground, I think it's going to be sort of dead good to soft ground at Newbury. But of course, it was heavy at the Curragh. And I was thinking, will he need slightly more of a test? He was trying over a mile and a quarter last season. But the more you look at it, the more you think, I wouldn't want to be against him. I'm not going to be tipping him here. I'm going to be going each way in the race. But yeah, you can see that he might just be the best treated horse in the race. Again, going through this, I didn't think that many were entirely convincing. I think you can make some kind of case for a few if, you know, everything pans out for them, or if this or if that. You have to be slightly conditional with all of them. And I would want a slightly bigger price than you're getting at the moment. But I think that's very likely about Brunch, who I would fancy to hit the frame here. The negative with Brunch is Michael Dodds. Let's have a quick look at Michael Dodds' stats this season.
There's no negatives to Brunch. Brunch is fantastic. Negatives. There are no negatives. Just love a good brunch. With a smashed avo and a poached egg. Lovely jubbly.
With the horse Brunch,
okay.
The negative... is the current form on paper of Michael Dodds, who I think is one from 66 this year, this calendar year.
I think that was recent, though. Was that a recent winner? Did he have one recently?
He did. He had one two days ago. Yeah. He had
a tide is turning.
Well, I think with a two-year-old debutante. So hopefully the tide is turning. But yes, you wouldn't think so based on that. But in fairness, if you look at how Michael Dodds' horses are running, it's a little bit unlucky. I mean, in fairness, he doesn't get them going early. He's a proper turf season campaigner. He trains his horses to peak sort of from May through September, and then beyond that, you're just tying them up for the rest of the season. So it's a trader I like an awful lot. You know where you stand with his horses generally, but although he's not had any winners, they're all running, or most of them are running pretty well. Obviously, Comanche Falls went off at 20-25-1 at Newmarket yesterday in a group race and was beaten ahead. He's had another couple of horses placed. Tagar was the winner at Beverly in a two-year-old novice. I think that was first time, where he looked a million with a furlong to run and has ended up running out a pretty comfortable winner by a length and a half. Yeah, but he looked like he was going to be beaten, you know, 7 to 10 lengths with a furlong and a half to go and flew home. And although no winners, Langham was second. A lot of them are finishing in and around the money in big fields. It's only a matter of time before things click for Michael Dodds. So I think people will look at the form and go, there's a big negative, and Brunch will drift in the betting. I'd be hopeful of getting around 14-1 about him. But he's a pretty solid performer. He missed the Lincoln to run in the listed race there instead. And listen, you can take a couple of views of that. He was beaten four lengths by Astral Bull, but Astral Bull would have been the lowest rated horse in that race in the Doncaster Mile. She was coming into that with a rating of 86. So he was giving her, I think, £5. He's rated 104 and was beaten four lengths. He should have been beating her on the figures. So again, that suggests that Brunch should be a bigger price than he is. And I'm hoping if people pile into the favourite that, you know, a few of these will have to drift. And Brunch might well be one of those. He's just very reliable around a mile. He's high in the weights now, if I'm marking 104. But I just looked through this field and thought a lot of them looked high in the weights. And it's not, although this is generally a really competitive handicap, it looks very lopsided this year. Latam looks well handicapped. Everything else looks like they've got a little bit to prove. One or two of them could be bounced back. I mean, Jimmy Hendrix could be a better horse this year. Gets blinkers on first time for Rafe Beckett. That might be, you know, that could be a turning point for him. He could simply be, you know, a horse who was at his best as a two-year-old who's now, you know, a little bit high in the weights. And that's true of a few of them. Dawn of Liberation on the back of a wind operation. I thought that was kind of interesting as well. Owned by Mrs. Susan Roy. She's due a winner, isn't she? That one first time out last year, Dawn of Liberation. So on the back of a wind operation, maybe that's the time to catch that. But there were quite a lot of horses like that. I thought, well, maybe if this pans out, maybe if that surgery's been successful, maybe if this headgear works. Great Max making its debut for Alice Haynes. Again, she's got a good record with horses starting out for her. But I thought the more I looked at Great Max, the more I thought he had a lot to prove off a mark of 99. I think he will come good this season for Alice Haynes, but I think she's got to give him a few runs to get him down the weights first, because he's harshly handicapped on what he showed last year. And again, he's handicapped on his two-year-old form. So the more I looked at it, the more I wanted something that's got a history of good form in races like this. And Brunch is the one who fits the bill. Generally very reliable when he gets his conditions. Lots of good form in top mile handicaps, and hopefully the price will drift a little bit from where it is at the moment because of those factors. But he's still a reasonable price as it stands. I'm just, you know, maybe being a bit greedy and hoping to get a point or two bigger.
Okay, there we go. No negatives, Brunch. Eggs Benedict, sometimes buttermilk fried chicken burger is pretty good as well. Bottomless Brunch is really good too. Right, those are the thoughts on the Spring Cup. I was going to have a quick look at Navan as well, because there's some really interesting runners for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. However, Frank Hickey, as ever, on a Saturday afternoon, you've gone to the Mighty Thirsk.
Yeah, look, I just thought you might get slightly bigger than maybe you might have anticipated. And at Valdeiro in the 1255, the five furlong maiden, just because you've Sergeant Wilco in there against him, who was just caught in the line, I think, by Ballon d'Or and Musselburn on his debut. Valdeiro, of course, was the favourite in the Brocklesby, even though it was, didn't even go off favourite. It was very weak on the show anyway, but it was done at 101 when nailed near the line. But just those Ammo horses, obviously, just flying it, particularly the two-year-olds. And yeah, I thought you might get, you know, close to evens or something maybe. And if you did, thought that would probably be a bet. And at Navan, there is a few interesting listed races, but the one that kind of caught my eye was the 5.5 furlong listed committed stakes, is it? Yep. You've got Aesop's Fable, Shark Tash, the Antarctic all around there. But I just give a little bit of a squeak to Ocean Quest. She won the first maiden of the year, the Curragh, last year, didn't she? And when last seen, she was only touched off by Treasure Trove in the Group 3 Round Tower Stakes. That was last August. She was running on really strongly there, just failed to get it up. She's obviously getting weight off the others here. I think she's getting 10 pounds off Aesop's Fables and Shartash and 8 pounds off the Antarctic. Look, if they're fully wound up, maybe she might have a bit in her plate, but at the same time, you imagine there may be Commonwealth Cup horses and they won't be quite peaking here. While I'd imagine she might be ready to go, and yeah, she might be a bit of value against the rest of them.
Ocean Quest in the 3:30 at Navan. That, as you rightly said, the committed stakes, which looks like it's kind of like a trial for the Commonwealth Cup, Aesop's Fable and the Antarctic for Aidan, with Ryan riding the Antarctic, Shartash, of course, a Group 1 two-year-old as well. Watch out also for Ryan Moore. He's on board some really interesting horses, including Jackie O in the Salisbury Stakes, recognised trial for the Oaks, 2 for Aidan and Nash with Diamonds and Forever. Right, and the Vintage Crop Stakes. Is it eye-catching that Ryan rides Emily Dickinson instead of Bolshoi Ballet in that race, the 4:35? Suggesting, because it looks like Kyprios is not going to make the Ascot Gold Cup, I think.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That you're looking for, you're trying to identify who the major contenders for that are. And obviously she's... she took her form up a notch by winning over 2 miles at the Curragh in October. That's I wasn't absolutely certain she'd be suited by 2 miles, but she won the Loughbrown Stakes in pretty good fashion. Certainly as good at 2 miles as at shorter. She's worth testing as a potential Gold Cup horse. I'm not absolutely. But absolutely convinced by her. But you know, if I was Ryan, I'd probably be on her here, because I think you know where you stand with Bolshoi Ballet, and he's clearly not going to be a Gold Cup horse. He's liable to be on his travels again, isn't he? Off to the States in the summer. So yeah, if you need to determine who you're going to send to ask it for the big race of the meeting, as it is, of course. She's the Gold Cup
at Royal Ascot. Look, watch out for those
still, ones. Yeah, she'd still have her work cut out to beat French Claim, I think. Yeah. He looked good there in his reappearance at Navan, and the second Taipan was just touched off at Tipperary last night, off of Market 96. So I'd say he'll make the market, I would have thought, and he'd be the one to beat.
Some potential Royal Ascot clues there at Navan, so watch out for that on Saturday afternoon. All right, lads, weekend naps. I think I know Rory's, but I'm going to go to you, Frank, because I think I know Rory's.
Mojo Stan. I was going to go Remarque in the Fred Darling, but the price going... Jonathan, we'll go all in. We'll go Magna Sam and Scottish National.
Magna Sam. And when you say all in, does that mean win only?
Sure. Put her eggs in the basket. I'll back him each way, because, like, you know, you'd be sick if he finished third, like, and you backed him win only at 20s, don't you?
Ah, yeah, big time. Okay. And Rory, just for the sake of, well, we may as well, what's your name of the weekend?
Mojo Star in the Dubai thingy surprise. The finest
surprise. I don't know.
That would be the finest surprise, because strictly speaking, it would be a surprise if he won according to the betting of the moment, but no surprise at all to us.
Okay, so Mojo Star in the opener at Newbury and Frank Scone in the Scottish Grand National. Thank you very much for listening. A reminder, we are going to have daily pods for Punchestown next week, starting Monday evening. I'd say we'll have our first one out. Weekend plans for the big week, Frank? Are you taking the weekend off?
I actually am off this weekend, yeah.
I know you are, by the way. You know, I know you are, because myself, a mutual friend, I'm meeting him for dinner and pints. You were invited and you said, no, can't go.
No, see, my missus had asked me to take the weekend off because she was doing something, and she can't stand listening to the podcast. She's like, God, I can't stand listening to the podcast. Why do they want to go to dinner with him? No, it's unfortunate. I wouldn't mind going now myself, but look, we'll do it again sometime. But yeah, I'll have to take Oliver to football training on Sunday morning.
GAA or soccer?
GAA at the moment. They do kind of a small thing up in Dunboyne there, and it's very good to get them all out. Like, look, they're not going to turn them into inter-county players, but I think it's good to get them out and get them involved and get them
not yet
carry them out for a bit. But
The thoughts of a son of Frank Hickey donning the royal green, how's that sound?
To be fair, like, as in, when you talk about Gaelic football, like, my first memory is Cork and Meath in the late 80s. They were huge rivals, and they were probably the two best teams in the county for 3 or 4 years, or in the country for 3 or 4 years. So yeah, it'll...
Would you, if your son togged out for Meath, would you wear the green of the Royal County?
Actually, look, I suppose I've married into Meath, like, you know, so you'd have to support them. But
I'll work on the accent.
I'll always be a Cork man.
You've got to work on the accent. Rory, plans for the weekend?
Not an awful lot going on this weekend, so I'll be sleeping.
Amazing. That sounds fantastic.
Which I've been looking forward to that for quite a while, to be perfectly honest.
That sounds great.
Hopefully get a little bit of sleep tomorrow.
Oh, I love it. That's a weekend to be very much.
This is the future, PK. when you hit 50, it's all about when can I next have a lie-in.
Oh, stop. There's nothing better. Like, I like nothing more than like going for a nap during the day on my days off.
We are heading into the territory of putting people asleep, I suppose. I probably shouldn't ask what we're doing.
I would love a having a nap podcast. Once a week, we talk about our best three naps of the preceding 7 days.
Everyone's going, I can't wait to hear a nap, and then you just talk about sleep for an hour.
Naps is the new name of the podcast. All right, listen, have a great weekend. Thanks a million for listening. Do check out the Paddy Power Racing YouTube channel for that brilliant punters panel episode with Franberry Ruby, Smooth Tom hosting, and Johnny Deneen, special guest. So he's always good value. And also the Zed podcast coming your way every day next week for Punchestown. Have a great weekend, all. Enjoy your naps.